This is the True Voice Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. Back in 2011, I started a social business agency called True Voice Media. In 2013, I launched this podcast because my audience told me that they wanted to learn more about how social media could help them grow their business, but they wanted it to be interesting and without all the standard social media hype and BS. Just someone who will give it to them straight with honest, simple strategies that they can use today. If you're a new listener and that sounds like what you want too, listen to this episode. And if you love it, subscribe to our show. We'd love to have you on board. So without further ado, let's get started. This is episode 36 of Conversations. I am here with Brian Basilico from Aurora, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago. Excellent. Brian, welcome to the show. Introduce yourself to everybody that's listening.
As you said, man, Wayne's World, party on, excellent, woo, 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 woo. That's the most famous thing about Aurora, Illinois.
It really is.
So yeah, I'm, you know, Jeff, we met online and it's a pleasure to be here. And just like you, I'm an internet marketer and you know, do a lot of things online, love helping people. And, you know, I'm an author, I'm a speaker, I'm a coach. I do a whole bunch of different things and I'm just, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you very much. Well, I was going to, you know, one of the things that I wanted to immediately mention to the people listening is that Brian is a super busy guy. And a lot of you listening, a lot of you that know me personally have reached out to me before and said, oh, you're really busy. Like, do you ever sleep? And Brian, I have to ask you the same question because I looked at your online presence and I got to say, it's not often that I encounter people where I'm like, damn, I kind of feel like they are, they're putting out a little bit more content than I am. So do you sleep?
Sometimes. No, I do sleep. The cool thing is like my kids are all grown. You know, my wife's got a full-time job. And so I actually can focus a lot of time on the business. So I start in the morning. I do a lot of networking, face-to-face networking. I'm on some boards and things like that. So I usually use the morning for face-to-face stuff. And then the rest of the day is all client-based stuff. And sometimes, you know, I go to bed at 11, 12 o'clock at night, get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and start over. Yeah. So, you know, it's just, it's a matter of just fitting in as much as you possibly can.
Hey, man, I dig that. I do the same sort of thing, and I love that you brought up all the face-to-face stuff because, you know, I'm sure, like me, you're in the we're in the same business. We're mm-hmm. dealing with a lot of the same concepts, and people always say to me, well, I feel like social media makes people antisocial. And what I typically say to them, I'm like, that's not on social media. That's on you, or that's on who's using it. I use Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn to have more breakfast, lunches, happy hours, and dinners than anybody else. They're just my tools to create face-to-face connections. So I love that you brought that up and that you're one of the tribe that does that as well.
Oh, absolutely, man. As a matter of fact, in my book, I talk about the whole know, like, and trust. And I consider know to be the place where it starts, and that's the face-to-face. That's where you get to know people, and you sit down and have a conversation with them. And one of the things I like to do in the face-to-face stuff is I call it be the Google. How can you be a resource to people? And I actually had these little notepads printed up, and they've got my logo on there, and it's like I keep them in my iPad case and in my briefcase and all the other stuff, and it's like I've got a connection for you. And the whole thing I try to do is try to find connections for people and connect them up so that they can make more business. And that's one of the things I think is incredibly important, and that's how you create a golden Rolodex. I mean, you get people that are interested in, you know, helping you because you've helped them first. So yeah, face-to-face connections are huge. Social media is the like portion. That's the place where we really get to know each other better. You know, it's like, I got a dog, you got a dog. We got something to talk about. You know, I play golf, you play golf. I'm a musician, you're a musician. It just creates those connections that we would do in a normal social setting. And then the trust thing is something that happens because people, you know, they really feel like you're sincere, you have integrity, you're doing all these things, and they know that you're doing great things for people, and that's where transactions happen. So that know, like, and trust is a sequence, but that face-to-face stuff starts with the know. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. You know, I think one of the problems is that what we're talking about here, you know, relationships and getting to know people and creating connections and providing value for people through connections with your content or whatever it is, those are things that are generally very difficult to measure, specifically if they take place over a long period of time. And I think that's what gives us it's one of the challenges for people in our industry is being able to communicate that
to the people that we serve, that this may take you several years, but you kind of have to trust that it's going to pay off. And just an example from my own world, I met a guy back in 2010 when I was working at a PR firm. I met him back then, and we've just kept in touch. He's been on my email list ever since I started my company in 2011. And just recently, he brought me into a project, and the just keeping in touch with him, everything. We just signed a very big contract with a company that he's a part of. You know, I could look at that and say, you know, back then when I met him and I just kept in touch with him, I wasn't looking for any sort of ROI. I just thought he was an interesting guy and we'd keep in touch. But, you know, there, it's very difficult to measure that, especially when you look over the life of it. You know, was it any individual email that I sent that caused that? Or was it just being a good person and being generous with my time? So I think that's a real challenge that we have. But I want to talk a little bit about some of the stuff that you're working on and give you an opportunity to tell me about some of your sort of guiding principles and things like that. But here's where we should start. You know, you've got the podcast, you've got the book, you're a speaker and an author, and you wrote this awesome titled book, It's Not About You, It's About Bacon, which, I mean, immediately should be flying off the shelves. Give me a little synopsis about what the book is about, what the podcast is about, and kind of what you speak and write about, so we can kind of steer that into the rest of the conversation, because I want to tie it together with your background.
Sure. Well, the best place to start is my background. When I was a little kid, I always wanted to be a musician. I've been a musician all my life. And so the first business that I started was in my dad's basement. I created a recording studio. I was doing bands and stuff like that. Went to college figuring, if I can't be a musician, I want to repair amps so that I could be a roadie, you know, go tour with, you know, I could live vicariously through them. So I went to DeVry, got a degree in electronics, and by doing that, I ended up getting a job working at AT&T being a video producer. I mean, it started out just wiring cables and stuff like that, and then I finally got, you know, a camera on my shoulder and then learned how to edit and then became a producer. Left that company, started a commercial recording studio where I did jingles, all the cassettes for Avon Ladies. Remember cassettes, man?
Oh, my God, yes. And, of course, if you show a number two pencil to a millennial and ask them, you know, what was this used for in an audio context, they have no idea.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, after that, I sold that company to a multimedia production company, started doing CD-ROM development, websites, flash animation, all that other stuff. Left them and went to work for Arthur Andersen for a while doing, you know, real heavy-duty programming training stuff with them. They had a huge facility in Chicago. That was their home base. Ended up leaving there to go work at an ad agency where I really started getting my arms around online advertising. I mean, we were doing banner ads when banner ads were banner ads. You know, it's before, you know, Google AdWords and all this other stuff. And then after that, I started my company 15 years ago. The first thing I started developing was business card CDs, which were, you know, either video or some macromedia director programs or, you know, something you'd plug in a computer and it would do something. And, of course, you know, after a couple of years, that went away because there is no such thing as a CD anymore. And had to constantly reinvent myself to keep myself relevant. And now what I do is probably the biggest thing of my business is I call myself a social media strategist, where I walk into companies, help them figure out a plan to get found better online. And you know, and I know, I mean, there's SEO all over the place, and then there's real traffic. And what I always say is SEO is great to drive traffic, but what you really need is to get customers. So the whole focus is I figure out how to find their avatar, how to get those people the customers that they need so it creates money. And so I use all of that skill and technology to figure out the right way to do things. So I wrote the book. It's not about you, it's about bacon, but the full title is Relationship Marketing in a Social Media World. When I started writing the book, it was a how-to-do social media book. I got about three chapters into it, and by the time I was done, I realized that the first two chapters were obsolete, so I stopped. And then I rewrote it as a why-to book. Why do you need social media? And all the things that we've been talking about, relationships, know, like, and trust, getting customers, that's what the whole book is about. Is really about trying to understand and wrap your arms around this big monster called online marketing and social media. And so that's what my speeches are about. And then the podcast is really more about introducing some really cool people to the world that do all these great things. I mean, it could be anything from a Pinterest expert, internet marketing expert, somebody who does book marketing, somebody who does coaching, somebody who does mindset mapping. I mean, it's all these different things that really help people get their arms around how to run their businesses, whether it's a small business or online marketing, it doesn't matter. It's all that stuff. And of course, the podcast is a natural thing for me, being a recording studio geek and an audio guy. You know, it's just like, man, I get to play with these toys again. You know, it's so cool. So that's kind of the big broad brush picture.
So, I mean, from that, it's obvious that you have just such a diverse, grouping of different inputs. So, obviously you're coming from a more traditional media background, and mm-hmm. you've been doing this for, 30 years now, you said, right?
35, yeah.
35 years. Okay, I'm 35, so you've literally been doing this my entire life. But you come from this traditional background. You've got, you know, the audio experience, the video experience, the actual physical media. And then somewhere along this path that you were on, like the world just kind of shifted. You know, you said nobody uses CDs anymore. At some point, we did go sort of all web, and we opened it up, and now we gave these opportunities for relationships to become, really digital starting points for relationships. Mm-hmm. So you have this, you know, this whole host of different skills, which you can't expect any of your clients to come to the table with. So you're armed with all of these different tools that you can speak, confidently about. And because of all these different things, you were actually recognized as one of the top 40 digital strategists in marketing for 2014, which I'm sure you're quite proud of. But if you have all of this background and you have this recognition and you're trying to help clients and you have all of these things as assets, what's a good starting point that you found to be able to communicate to somebody who has absolutely none of that and they understand none of this? What is your guiding principle or philosophy that you've been able to use to get people to see how you can help them with all of this stuff? Because they're not coming in with that much history and having watched it develop over 35 years.
Well, one of the guiding principles that I have is trying to be an educator and try to teach people things. And the other guiding principle is having a true value proposition. Mm-hmm. The value proposition that I try to bring to the table with all of my people, and it's funny, I just got off a phone call where a guy had somebody that was ready to advertise for him, and it's going to cost him $1,500 a month. My value proposition is pretty straightforward. Whatever you do in marketing, you have to make $3 for every single dollar you spend. You need to make a dollar for the money that you're going to spend with me. If you're not willing to be a participant in this, chances of your success are pretty slim. So you're going to have to pay for your own time. And then finally, you have to make a profit. You know, everybody wants that magic bullet. Just do me a favor and put up Facebook ads and just make me millions of dollars. And that's not how relationships work. You know, it's not the way that you're going to do it. So this value proposition is huge. So what I say to people is, you know, any advertising that you're doing, is there an ROI on it? And one of my monikers lately, which I've had to figure out over the course of the years, is I really try to only work with companies that can actually read a balance sheet. If they can read a balance sheet, then they understand return on investment, and then the messages I'm talking about make sense. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it really starts there. And so that's the beginning of all of the speeches that I give, the webinars I do, the podcasts. It's really trying to get people to understand that marketing is always an investment. It should never be an expense. Advertising can always be an expense because you could spend thousands of dollars and never get a single penny back. So this guy had somebody that was, you know, willing to charge him $15 or $1,500 a month to be in a magazine. And I said to him, okay, do you believe that by spending that $1,500 that you're going to be able to make an additional $4,500 a month for every month that you're doing that? And he turns around and goes, no. Okay. And then there's your answer. You know, it's like if you can't make money on it, then you're just throwing your money away. So that's the base point. Once people understand that, then they're open to say, okay, how do I do that? And then you've got to figure it out. And the other thing too, being in a place of integrity, is you have to decide, can I really make that person $3 for every dollar they spend? If I can't, then I turn the customer away. And believe me, I've had to do that a handful of times. I had a guy who found me after writing my book and said, hey, I wrote this book. I want you to help me market it. And I said, well, what's your niche? And he says, a very narrow niche of people. It's something very scientific. And I said, well, what are you getting paid per book? And he said, 50 cents. And I said to him, I can't help you because we need to sell 6,000 books, you know, for every time you spend $1,000. And I just don't think that $1,000 is going to be able to sell you 6,000 books. So I don't think this is going to be a good fit. And I honestly didn't know a place to send him. But normally I try to send people to some place if there is an opportunity for that.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I have a bunch of questions for you around that. And the first is, you kind of put marketing and advertising in different buckets. I've always kind of seen advertising as a subsection of marketing. So it's one of those mm-hmm. things where, you know, you may not make your money back. And I think advertising has also changed over the course of, you know, I would say over my lifetime, which is your career. Mm-hmm. And I would say that now where we look at advertising, it's less what we thought of in the sort of the Mad Men era of advertising. And it's a little bit more like amplifying content is what it really looks like to me nowadays, specifically when we look at social advertising, obviously. It's taking content and making sure it's in the view of the people you're trying to reach. So, and it's much more measurable than it used to be. So now right. there's a little bit more of a call to action for marketers to be able to measure their advertising efforts. So you distinguish them kind of differently. I'm just a little bit curious about that, mm-hmm. whether you see them as different or whether advertising is sort of a subcomponent of marketing and part of the marketing mix.
It really depends on the kind of advertising. I mean, I'm a firm believer in doing postcards. As a matter of fact, I told the guy I was talking to, let me give you some context. He does furniture refinishing. Mm-hmm. All right. So the lady said that she was going to send out to these upscale people, 25,000 people per month. And, you know, out of those 25,000 people, you know that, you know, 1% of them may actually even pick up the phone. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a normal subset of any kind of advertising. I don't care whether you're doing Google AdWords or print pieces or things like that. You know, 10% of the people will bring it in the house and 1% of those people might act on it. So, you know, when you sit down and look at that, as you get 10% of 25,000 is 2,500, and 1% means 250 people, I have a hard time believing that 250 people are going to need what he has at the time this comes. So it's really understanding the metrics of what it is that you're getting. Now, advertising for him could be doing a print postcard of a before and after of a project he does every single month, and sending it out to a predefined list that he has of past customers or somebody like that, where he has an audience that may not have the need, but it's not a huge subset of people that he doesn't have any kind of connection to. That's great advertising, because you're going to sooner or later catch people at a time where they need what you provide as far as a service goes. So I look at advertising as shotgunning, because yes, you mm-hmm. do have more capabilities. But with the online stuff, it's much more measurable. And it also, you know, there's a difference between outbound marketing and inbound marketing, right? So, you know, inbound marketing is drawing people in. That's what the podcasts and the blogs and the videos and the blabs and the, you know, periscopes and all those things do. They draw people into your content. The outbound marketing is, just basically sending out as much as you can and hoping that it's going to draw people in. But you don't get as many measurables. The other thing that I run into a lot is customers that are fighting what I call, the traffic mongers. We're going to get you a whole bunch of traffic. We're going to list you in all these directories, and we're going to drive a lot of traffic to your business and all this other stuff. There's a huge difference between traffic and consumers who need what you need. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. So a couple things. One is, do you believe then that there's no value to an awareness building campaign in marketing? Something, so if you think about your marketing as, you know, four or five different things that you might be running concurrently, is there value to having one section of that be purely based around awareness?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, awareness is huge. I mean, you have to be able to do that. Even in online marketing, a lot of it is just basically creating top of mind awareness. I don't disagree with that at all. But it really,
yeah, but for that, if you spend a dollar, you're probably not going to make $3 back on the awareness side of things, right?
Exactly, yes.
Okay, cool. So just wanted to make sure I was clear on that. But yeah, the next question I would have for you in that is because I agree with a lot of your premises, and generally when I – it's funny you mentioned it, because generally when I talk to a client, I say, if you give me a dollar, it's my job to bring you back $2
sure.
or at least $2 or at least bring you back your dollar. But I like to use the $3. I like that a little bit better. But you know what you're talking about is a particular philosophy where you say, you know, there's not a lot of value – necessarily in just bringing traffic, for instance, which I, you know, for the most part agree with, and I'm sure you and I could discuss
oh, yeah.
our nuances that we'd both agree
Absolutely.
On. But what do you do about the clients that you have that just wants something. So for instance, I just want 50,000 followers. I just want 1 million hits to my website this year. I just want X, Y, and Z. How do we, how as marketers can we turn that away, and if we think we can do it, and disprove that there's not a value to that? And at the same time, are you ever willing to just give that away and let some other marketer take that for your client, whereas you can just stay with them and bring them value in other ways while you're accomplishing what they're looking for?
Yeah, no, I'm always willing to let clients go. I don't have a problem with that because I really want to work with people that I know that I can make successful, because we're in a relationship economy. And the way you get the best clients are by referrals, by people that say, you know, this person did this for me, you've got to work with this person. And that's incredibly important. If you... Let's go to the whole, you know, my goal is to get as much traffic as possible. And I've seen these clients do this, and I've tried to say, hey, you're probably not doing the best thing. And so they hire a company that promises them, you know, X amount of traffic to their website. And they end up getting the goal that they were looking for. But when you go and look at analytics, they're not getting what they're looking for. Now, let me explain. I call it the trifecta of marketing. The trifecta of marketing is having a killer website as a home base. The second piece is understanding analytics and measuring it. And the third piece is generating content. And it could be print pieces, it could be web pieces, it could be video or anything that drives traffic back to that home base. Now, home base can also be a phone call. You know, it's whatever is going to create conversations where people are going to spend time with you. The one woman that I'm talking about specifically hired a firm that went out and got her. She wanted 10,000 followers on Facebook. She got 10,000 followers on Facebook. How many of them were in the area that could actually purchase from her? 10.
Mm-hmm.
All the others were from India and China and everything else. Now, out of those 10, did any single one of them actually purchase anything from her? Absolutely not. Because even them were not focused to the specifics of what she had to offer. She was a business coach, and you know, there were people that were following a particular lead, but they weren't really somebody that understood what the value of having a coach is. Now, I don't know if you've got any coaches, but I'm a firm believer in this, man. Every doctor needs a doctor. Every mentor needs a mentor. Every coach needs a coach. And so, you know, you have to have the mindset of understanding what a business coach can do for you and what the ROI is there in order to even get one. So many people don't understand, you know, the ROI of that kind of stuff. So in her case, she spent a good chunk of change. She got her goal, but she didn't get anything out of it. You know, so there's got to be some kind of end game or at least some measurables. And I'm going back to the balance sheet and the P&L statement, man. There's got to be a way to marketably measure what's going on. That's why, you know, the analytics piece of this is so incredibly important, you know, is Are people actually looking at their Google Analytics? Where is their traffic coming from? What pages are they going to? Where are they entering? Where are they exiting? You know, the pages that are getting the most traffic, do they have the call to action that creates what it is that you want, whether it's a phone call, an email, get on my email list, fill out a form, do something? Are you measurably looking at all of the things that are going to make you money?
Yeah, and you know what, like the thing that I, the place where I always get stuck is this. So, I mean, I can tell from talking to you and the conversations we've had and just the content that you have out there that we are cut from the same cloth in terms of how we look at social media, our obsession with results and with making things measurable and really identifying the strategy about going about what you're doing instead of just flying by the seat of your pants. But where I always get stuck, and you know, I'd love to get your take on this, because a lot of the listeners of this show are either people who are in some sort of a business outside of our industry and are trying to figure out how it fits, or they're people that are in this industry and they're trying to identify how to better serve their clients, how to better take on problems that we all kind of run into. And I think the thing I'm looking at is, you and I both can obviously look at it and say there is no value to just getting 10,000 random followers. We can obviously both look at the website and say there's no value in just getting 1 million random people to your website. It's about getting the right people there. And yet we still have a business environment where we are going to be talking to prospects and serving potential clients who are going to want things that are not in their best interest. How Is this ever going to change, in your opinion? And is there something that we can do collectively as consultants, as coaches, to help break this mindset? Because it seems so black and white to me that obviously you want to be able to generate a return for your business and measure the right things. But we're still not seeing that. How are you approaching this with prospects to let them know that you're not going to work with them if they're not going to be measuring the right things? How do you make that case?
Well, you know, you're not always going to hit a home run, but most of the time you can tell within a short period of time. I mean, I've done, you know, a handful of clients that had the best of intentions and never followed through on the things that they needed to provide. So it's always having touch points with people and understanding that, you know, this is going to be a good fit or it's not going to be a good fit. I mean, I worked with a IT company, you know, where I gave them, you know, we did one-on-one coaching and I gave them all the things that they needed to do. And then we come back the second week and nothing got done because they didn't believe in what I was saying. And eventually I finally had to turn around and say, look, I'm not going to be successful for you if you can't do it. So, you know, giving you one more shot, either get this stuff done or let's just call it a day because you're not going to be happy. And I don't want to keep taking your money. And frankly, I want to use that slot to find somebody who's going to be successful. You know, with the limit, and you mentioned it before, man, it's like there are a limited amount of hours in a day, you know. So whether it's face-to-face networking or working with coaching clients or building things for clients, you know, whether it's websites or email campaigns or those other things, it's really about making sure that you're choosing the ones that are the best fit for you so you can be the best fit for them. And that's a hard place to be. Dude, that's taken me a long time to learn because it used to be, man, if they breathe and have a wallet, they're all good, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But what about when you have you found yourself ever in a situation where you have the right fit, you can see it in their eyes that they want to do the right thing. They want to close the deals and they want to get there and move their business forward, but they just have the wrong metrics in mind. Or you know, the other thing I was thinking is you know, you had mentioned this idea that they have to be involved in it, which is one of our core philosophies. Mm-hmm. I believe that there's five components of social, one of them being engagement, and that's the one that we are the least likely and in general we refuse to take on. Mm-hmm. I don't want to run somebody else's Facebook page or account. I don't want to run their Twitter. I believe they should own their voice. It's one of the reasons we named our company True Voice Media.
Love it.
So, you know, we share that same thought, but there are these people, there are going to be these clients where no matter how much you make the case, no matter how much you say it, they believe that they can outsource that function. Is it? Do you see it, as I kind of do, that sort of approach is going to die over the long term and that people will have to own their voice? Or do you think it's something else entirely that it'll live on, it's just not your speed?
Let me just ask you a quick question. How many times do you log on to Facebook a day and say, I can't wait to be sold something?
Me personally, very, very rarely. I would say probably never. Though there are times where I go out there and I do say, hey, I'm looking for X, Y, and Z. And if a company came in and, you know, for instance, when I was looking for social listening software, one of the things I would do is actually go on Twitter and say, hey, I'm looking for recommendations of social listening software. Anybody got one? And if a social listening company didn't actually reach out to me, I didn't even look at them because that's the number one thing that a social listening company should be listening for.
Right. Right.
That's what I thought.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the cobbler who has holes in their shoes. Yeah. No, I agree with you 110%.
Exactly.
You know, and yeah, it's like, you know, the whole point of the know, like, and trust in social media is you've got to be you. You know, it's like you have to be that person. I call it post and run, you know, where people hire somebody else to go and post everything. But, you know, somebody makes a comment and nobody's answering the comment, or the person who is posting doesn't even know the right answer. You know, it's like if you're going to ask for people to be engaged with you, you need to invest in that. And that's where I think that a lot of people make mistakes. Now, one of the things that I talk about in my book and in general is I actually give a numeric value to engagement. If somebody likes something, I give it a point. If somebody comments on something, I give it 5 points. And if somebody shares something, I give it 25 points because now I'm talking to their audience at the same time. And the whole goal of all of this stuff is to get as many shares as possible, especially if you're doing things that are engaging an audience that could potentially be your perfect customer. You know, so if as a client, this is the thing I try to get to them is the goal isn't necessarily to hit a home run with every post that you do. It's really to get the engagement that where other people love what you're posting so much that they share it, and now all of a sudden you're starting to spread the message. And I've seen this happen. I got a two-man acoustic band. I put up a simple little graphic on our Facebook page, and it was shared over 1,200 times, seen by over 100,000 people. And it was just a joke, you know. It was, and that happens all the time. You mentioned, you know, old posts that you put up where somebody all of a sudden said, "Oh, I want to work with you now." I mean, that happened to me, where I did. Actually, it wasn't even me posting. It was the fact that I post a lot on Facebook. And I was playing guitar at church, and the lead singer's mother decided to take a video and put it up on Facebook. It happened that somebody that I knew 5 years earlier at a different church, happened to run his own church down in Florida, saw the video, and it said to him, "This man is somebody that I need to talk to about actually rebranding our entire thing." And he came to me, and I got a huge job out of it, and I didn't do anything. Somebody else posted it, you know? So It's that integrity thing. It's the having the communication. It's being there and being a human being that makes social media social. Otherwise, it's just media.
So let me ask you this, though, because I think, you know, you and I can both agree that the landscape of social media has undoubtedly changed in the last probably week and a half,
yes.
Let alone the last several years. So if you look at the last, you know, couple of years and what's happening on Facebook, the entire way that you market on Facebook is consistently changing from, you know, do you do images, do you do videos, and do you now have to do ads? So I guess my question to you is, you have this example where you put out a piece of content and somebody else shared it, reached a lot of people, you got work out of it. In terms of what you're finding for yourself and for your clients, do you think that social advertising and promotion is essential, or is it just something that's recommended? Or do you think it's optional and you can actually get by still just doing organic?
Well, I mean, it depends on the business. I mean, every business has its own DNA, you know, and there's two pieces to every puzzle. I am Brian Basilico, okay? I've got a dog, I play golf, I do guitar, I do all these other things. Then I am the author. I've got my own page for that. I'm the podcast. I'm B2B Interactive Marketing. Each one of those have their own separate audiences. Now, the beauty of it is that I, as Brian Basilico, can share each one of those on my wall, which reaches a greater audience. But organically, if I just put stuff up on any of these with thousands of fans, you know, 10 people see it. So if I have a goal to reach a particular audience that is not made up of just my personal friends and fans, then I need to advertise. I need to pay for that and reach that particular audience. But if there is some kind of connection between that and the organic audience that I built, then I can get away without spending the money. But it just depends on who you are and what your goals are.
Got it. So in terms of, you know, obviously if you're going to be advertising something, you have to have something to say. You have to have something to do, and you obviously have to, you know, move that around an objective.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the best ways that obviously we're all using nowadays is content marketing. It's putting together videos. It's putting together podcasts like this. It's ebooks. It's all these different things. What sort of advice are you giving to your clients to help them stick out? And what sort of things are you working on now that you're, I guess, seeing success with, or, you know, just overall your assessment of the content marketing landscape? What are some of your keys to success?
Well, the keys to success is obviously first knowing your market and what they want. Okay. And I'll give you two different, success stories that are completely different. So one success story happens to be a guy who does something very specific, which is barcode testing. Okay. And what barcode testing is somebody, you make a barcode and you put it on something, it needs to be tested to make sure that the scanners are going to read it right. What we did for him is we actually figured out his audience. And what we did is we divided his audience into four different segments. We call them 101, 201, 301, 401. 101 is, I have no idea what a barcode is, but I got to learn this because I just got hired. 201 is, I know what a barcode is and I need to really kind of, you know, make sure that I'm doing all the right stuff. 301 is, I'm creating products that are going to Walmart, and if this barcode fails, it's going to bankrupt my company. And 401 is, I'm in the pharmaceutical business where these barcodes are so critical that if it's not correct, people will die. You know, so he was able to differentiate these audiences and create content for each one of those four different audiences. Through that content marketing, he was able to decipher that his 201 and his 401 were the most responsive and able to really focus on generating content for them, even though he continues to do it for all of them. And what he's been able to land is the 401 clients, which are the large pharmaceutical companies creating incredible wealth for him, his business has doubled because he found the right niche. So that content marketing is all done through blogging. The second one is a company I've just started working with, and what they manufacture is jardiniere and muffaletta and pickles. Okay, their content marketing could be a lot of different things. They could do their own TV show, but what we decided to do is have them create recipes and put it up on their website because recipes are huge. So they're using that content marketing to get out to the world to drive more traffic back to sell more of their product. And then we're also integrating email campaigns along with that to try to generate more, you know, specials for people, reviews, all those kind of things. So, you know, their content marketing is coming in the form of recipes and email marketing. So, you know, every company has its own DNA, and both of those have been incredible success stories for each one.
Awesome. Yeah, I totally get all of those. Those are good examples. Let me ask you this, because those are two, like, very I think those are very practical examples. Mm-hmm. I guess my question to you next would be, and just sort of, I think this is a good place for us to kind of to wrap and think about what our next conversation will be after this. But what I'd love to hear about is actually things that you're excited about and what you're looking at for the future of content marketing. Have you looked at any of these 360 videos on Facebook, or thought about Oculus Rift and the VR stuff that's happening, or augmented reality? Have you thought anything about how the collaborative or gig economy is impacting your clients, and kind of all of those sort of different things that are coming in? I mean, I guess what I'm really interested in is that you've been doing this for 35 years. You have gone from a completely analog to now what's a completely digital, I would say, with, you know, obviously postcards being an analog. What are you looking at now, or are you trying to still get your hands around what's happening now and help your clients get around this, or are you focused on the future and what's coming next?
All of the above. It's a hard question to answer because stuff changes so damn fast, you don't know. I mean, I give presentations on LinkedIn all the time, and you log in yesterday and all of a sudden groups change, you know? And yep. The dynamics of what those groups are doing has changed. So it's like, it really depends on the company. Are they B2B, B2C, you know, who's their audience? I think ultimately it boils down to the most basic things, and it's the same for you and me. I mean, it's no different for you and me as marketing professionals, is defining your avatar and being able to communicate with them the way they want to be communicated to. The things I'm excited about and been playing with are some of the newer technologies that have kind of revitalized Twitter, which is Periscope and Blab. You know, I've been on a lot of Blabs. I haven't done my own Blabs yet because I'm not at a point where I want to do that. My podcast is my Blab. But Blab, and let's talk about this from a consumer standpoint, okay? Imagine a HVAC company that does a weekly Blab show for their customers, which can be recorded and can be put up on their website, but they bring in an expert. Let's say an HVAC company brings in Trane, who is a furnace manufacturer, and they bring in and they start talking about the latest and greatest technologies and why these things are different. And then they invite their customers to come in and ask questions of both of them. Imagine a local company doing a weekly Blab show that can also be recorded and put up on your website as episodes. And it's like basically doing a podcast for the average Joe, and it's not that hard. You need a webcam and a microphone, and you're good to go. You know, those are cool technologies. I see a lot of people using Periscopes, but that tends to be a one-to-many, where Blab tends to be a more of a you know, community type project. So I see more of these kind of technologies where we're creating community and bringing people in and engaging them. And then we have the repeatability of having content that's been generated, and you can throw them up on YouTube, you can put them up on Google. You know, there's so many different things that you could do. It's how do we create engaging content that really serves people, that makes us be the top of mind expert. And it's true for coaches, for, you know, service providers, for product manufacturers. I mean, there's so many different ways to use this stuff. It's really understanding your audience and delivering the content that makes sense.
So let me ask you this question. So do you think, you've been in the business of marketing and various different production type positions, the threat of disruption, the reality of disruption, things coming in and changing the status quo, do you see that as, over the course of your career, something that's been gradual or something that's been this sort of instantaneous shift? And in terms of what you're preparing your clients for, do you prepare yourself more for taking clients along a gradual change, or is it something they need to adjust to like tomorrow?
Well, you know, it depends on the technology, but let's be real about this. The pace of change is happening at a faster pace every single day. So it doesn't matter, you know, and we're in a completely different economy where a lot of the things that we bought before, like when I owned my recording studio, I had $250,000 worth of gear. I had 5 employees and I had, you know, 2 floors of space and did $500,000 a year. Now you can do that exact same thing on an iPhone. You can record albums on an iPhone or an iPad. All you need is a simple little interface and a microphone and a couple other things, and you've got that entire technology sitting in there. I think the biggest thing about disruption is you have to be an adapter. You have to learn to reinvent yourself. Otherwise, you're going to fall by the wayside. And this is the difference between, I think, people that are going to be successful and people that are going to fall apart, is you've got to constantly be a knowledge junkie. You've got to learn how these things are going to happen. And you've got to try them. You know, the thing is that, you know, is Blab going to be here in 6 months? Is Periscope going to be in here in 3-6 months? Or, you know, I mean, 4K TVs versus 3D TVs and 360 TVs. I mean, you know, I used to be an early adapter. I was the guy that when the DVD player came out at $1,000, I bought it. I don't have an iWatch yet. You know, it's like I'm waiting for it to see how it adapts so that I can say that it's going to make a difference in my life. And every time I see somebody with an iWatch, I say, what do you think? You know, I get their feedback. So I've learned to reinvent, but also with a little bit of caution, is not to jump on every single boat that's pulling out of the dock. You know what I'm saying?
I got it. Be an adapter. Be flexible. So I think that's a good place for us to wrap this up. I have an Apple Watch, by the way, and after we hop off of this, I'll give you my feedback on it. But I want to thank you for coming on. We are clearly aligned in how we see this space. You know, thank you for the case studies, the examples, the, you know, just the background. It's always good to talk to someone who's been doing this literally as long as I've been alive. So tell people where they can go and be social with you, where they can find out more about your book, where they can find out more about your podcast, and I'll be sure to put it into the show
notes. Awesome, man. Well, the 3 best places to get a hold of me, obviously, you can find Brian Basilico on any kind of social media. It's BrianBasilico. If you want to listen to the podcast, it's baconpodcast.com. If you want to find out about the book, it's Not About You. It's NOTABOUT, the letter U.com. And my blog site is b2b-im.com. And that's one of my 20 websites that I use to market all my stuff.
Very cool, man. Very cool. Well, thank you for coming on to Conversations. For all of you out there listening, we hope you enjoyed this episode. Come back next time for another fascinating conversation with another fascinating person. Brian, thanks so much. Take care. To all you out there, thanks so much.
Thanks, Jeff.
You've been listening to the True Voice Media Podcast, and you made it all the way to the end of the episode. I'm proud of you. But now that you're here, this is what we're going to need you to do. First of all, head on over to your favorite podcast platform and give us a rating. If you don't know where to start, go to truevoicemedia.com/feedback. Next, if you're not yet a subscriber, it's time you fix that. Head over to truevoicemedia.com/podcast to subscribe by iTunes, Stitcher, or email. If you really want to show us some love, visit our partners and sponsors who help make this show possible. I know the show feels free, but trust me, it's not. I sure ain't done publishing these episodes, so I sure hope you're not done listening. I'll see you on the next one. Take care.